It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Never before have you felt such a buzz.
And this is exactly what I need.
Yeah! Party time!
Now listen!
Welcome to SLC Fanboys, three guys who love Star Wars, comic books, gaming, movies, and fangirls. Adam Thomas, self-appointed Starfleet captain and Cylon sympathizer. Andy Farnsworth, comic book Jedi and George Lucas apologist. Tyson Webb, Comic-Con moderator and amateur Sith. These are the SLC Fanboys.
SLC Fanboys, welcome into another podcast episode. We're grateful that you've joined us from wherever it is, whether it's social media or whether you're one of our longtime subscribers. Andy Farnsworth, Adam Thomas, Aaron Zundel. Today we are going to talk about the brand new sci-fi show on Fox called The Orville. This is, of course, created by Seth MacFarlane. If you haven't heard about it, it's kind of a comedic take on Trek. It's not necessarily a spoof, but it's certainly got spoof elements.
It's
a mixture.
Spoofy.
Well, it's spoofy, spoofy, but it's also homage, and it's
also pure
spoof
Trek mosh. In a lot of ways.
Spoof-mage.
Well, but there's a love to it.
Homage with a spoofy aftertaste.
Yes, that's a fair thing to say. So, it stars Seth MacFarlane as Captain Ed Mercer, Adrienne Palicki, who you might remember from
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
and from Friday Night Lights, as Commander Kelly Grayson, who, as we also learn, we find out pretty quick that her and Ed have a prior relationship. Penny Johnson-Gerald plays the Doctor. Scott Grimes and Jay Lee are the sarcastic, wisecracking, hilarious helmsman slash
navigator.
I guess they're both. I've always wondered why there's a helmsman and a navigator. I thought they were the same thing.
And I wonder if that's also a little bit of a reference to Star Trek, because those roles always kind of blurred over the years too.
That could be. And then we've got Peter Amakin as Commander Bordas, and a girl named Halston Sage as Alara Kitan. And then we have what I didn't know was a robot, but it turns out was a robot, Isaac, played by someone named Mark Jackson, who I've never heard of before.
And some we have Norm MacDonald does the voice.
Oh, Norm MacDonald's a blob. That's right.
Crew member. He's kind of like the Reg. I mean, he's not like Reg Barkley, but he's in and out of some episodes kind of as a, you know, tertiary character.
As a
character.
Side character who comes in to be funny. Okay, so we've got the Orville, a ship as part of a union. If this stuff sounds familiar, it's very intentional.
Yeah, to call this show a Trek clone would not be a misstatement. It is absolutely a Trek clone, but done with so much love that it's pretty forgivable, in my opinion.
So we have Ed gets put in command of the Orville, and then he goes about exploring space in humorous ways. So what do you think so far? We've got 6 episodes in, and right now that's half of what they're going to get for the season as far as we know right now.
There is a 13-episode order from Fox for this show. We're 6 in. So we're kind of at the midpoint, and you know, the 6th episode of this season did kind of leave you on a mid-season kind of a cliffhanger, almost kind of a what's going to happen next.
That's true.
So we're in this little break where they're I think getting ready to launch into something a little bit more substantive.
So here's my question then. Do you feel the same way 6 episodes in that you did after 1 episode?
No.
That's interesting. So what did you feel after 1 episode, Adam?
After 1 episode, I was more convinced of the direction and where it was going. And then we had a couple of episodes. And I'll say along the way, each episode has had some good moments, good laughs. I've liked a lot of the ideas. But at times, a little clunky in the execution, like it doesn't know what it wants to be. Does it want to be sort of a progressive, I have social messages for you like Star Trek, or do I want to be a flat-out comedy in the vein of a Galaxy Quest? And I don't think they've been entirely successful kind of picking their sides on that one at times. When they've done some comedy things, and we'll talk about this later, where they've taken kind of what we would think as a classic Star Trek plot
right.
and just changed it to add more yucks and laughs, I think that's really worked. At other times, I think when they get into some of the bigger issues, there was that one episode that involved the child from essentially a gay couple, or it was a that's the proxy story,
right?
And that, or I'm sorry, it was a female child that was born
to an all male species.
And there was a some stuff there. I thought the last 20 minutes sort of redeemed that episode with bringing back the comedy and the cross examination of my favorite character, the helmsman, played by Scott Grimes. But again, I was left after that episode, or even the one I believe just last week where Captain Mercer saves the alien children. And that last scene where it was still kind of a bitter warning from the alien survivor team, it's like, yikes, that's, you know, and I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just wondering, do these two ideas gel?
Yeah, this show has tried really hard, and it's still kind of trying to find its footing. I mean, it's dealing with this aspect of, we want to be comedy, and I wouldn't, it is spoofing Star Trek in some ways. In other ways, it's just raw comedy. They're just trying to add some brevity to it. And it,
sometimes it feels like Mystery Science Theater if it was actually incorporated into the episode that they're watching.
Yeah, there's some self-referential humor. And then in other moments, they're trying to be a straight-up Star Trek where they're dealing with social themes and sci-fi themes and themes of artificial intelligence or social norms, social constructs.
Well, heck, just the open looks like the Voyager open. I mean, that's the thing when I watched it is the way the ship is circled. The theme that we listened to by Bruce Broughton, by the way, who scored Silverado, if you've heard
of
Bruce Broughton.
Is very close to the theme. Feels like Galaxy Quest.
Yeah. Yes. And it's I mean, let's be honest. It's written and creatively kind of directed by Seth MacFarlane, who is the star and writer and creative director, Family Guy.
Jon Favreau directed the pilot.
Correct. But Brandon Braga, who's been deeply involved in the Star Trek universe since The Next Generation, is also a writer and executive producer and has directed a couple of episodes, which is why. And it's almost like Seth MacFarlane and Brandon Braga got together and said, "Okay, let's bring what you do, Seth, to the table, and let's bring what I do with Star Trek, you know, Brandon, let's bring that to the table." And I don't feel like they're fighting to get along.
They're not. I actually read an interview with Braga about this specifically, and Braga wanted to try to do some comedy, and so some of the jokes, or even a lot of the jokes he says are his, but then he lets MacFarlane have a pass-through at it, and he says Seth has the final ruling on the humor, like, if Seth thinks that it's good, it'll stay, and if he doesn't, he'll kill it no matter how much the writer likes it. So he's the ultimate arbiter on the humor.
And that is exactly how this feels, I think. It feels like we have two people with two totally different styles who really like each other's styles, who are trying to bring a marriage of those styles and get them to work, and they're always adjusting the balance of that from episode to episode. And there are moments where I think that it works. But I feel like they're still kind of getting that groove down. What do you think, Adam?
I'll tell you what. I think one of the things that we need to figure out, or the show needs to figure out, and we'll talk about that here in just a second, is Seth MacFarlane's role and how far do they want to let the series rest on his shoulders as an actor. And I think that's a big question mark we'll hit next coming up here on the SLC Fanboys. SLC Fanboys talking about The Orville, 6 episodes in on Fox, some ups, some downs, Galaxy Quest, Star Trek. Put it in a blender. We'll see what happens.
There's definitely some of that. I almost wondered if we have any distaste for it, and we've already talked a little bit about that comedy and sci-fi balance and what is it, but is it possible that we feel like that because we want it to be one or the other, and maybe we just got to embrace a whole new idea? Because I got to say, one of my biggest problems with it is, as much as I'll laugh at some of the things, it feels so out of place at times. Like, I almost don't want to laugh because I don't want to give him the credit for putting a 20th century joke in a show that there shouldn't be any reference in story to where they get that joke. But it's still funny, so I still laugh at it. But it makes me confused.
I don't mind the tonal. Excuse me. I don't mind the fact that they're trying. I mean, you know, in the last episode that, you know, they aired, the 6th episode entitled Krill, it opened with a Seinfeld joke. That was the episode.
No, that was the previous.
That was episode 5. But you know, I don't mind that so much. I do think this is a balance that can be had. I think eventually, though, they're going to have to realize that trying to do Next Generation type Star Trek down to the camera angles. I mean, this is basically shot and written as a Star Trek The Next Generation episode. Plus Seth MacFarlane's humor. I think that instead of trying to do one and then the other and one and then the other, which just feels like a total mismatch, I like both pieces. I think that they're going to have to learn to find a way to actually marry these two and create a whole new hybrid. You know, the way they shoot it's going to have to change. The way they write it's going to have to change. But I think they're getting closer with every episode.
Oh, yeah. And I... I want to be careful here because I do believe that Seth MacFarlane is immensely talented in many ways as a performer, as a writer, as a comedian. I just don't think one of those is acting.
You don't like him
as a voice actor. He's fine. He can.
That's one of the things you don't like about the show.
He can transform him. He can transform himself with his voices and characters. But when he plays the straight guy, so to speak, the same character in A Million Ways to Die in the West, the same character from Ted.
He's playing the straight man in a lot of these jokes.
Yeah, and it's a lot of it's. I just don't think he can carry scenes, especially when they go into the moral implications of this or that, or they have a message, a social message. I just don't think he has the acting chops to really carry those scenes as well as we'd like to. Now,
I
don't think he's incapable of doing that. I don't think it's a mistake to have him do that.
Think he's risen to the occasion yet.
I just think he needs to rise to the occasion. I don't want to say it's as simple as, well, you need to get some coaching there, buddy, but find other avenues for him as an actor where I think he can work better. Because if anything, it's to just de-emphasize the captain's character to more of a supporting role and have him sort of be the guy who shows up to make a couple of jokes and maybe not drive the plot. I'm just wondering. Again, I would not say that Seth MacFarlane is anywhere near Razzie Awards territory. Not even close.
Yeah, he's not that
bad. He does
bad.
Fine. I just think if they had cast the show differently in a way where Seth MacFarlane gets to play the smart Alec Helmsman himself, kind of a bit, I think that would have been a better fit for Seth MacFarlane than the title role, the main lead character. I think it's just a little too much Seth sometimes.
I was going to actually agree with you. I'm thinking in specific of the episode about a girl where he's taking outrage that on the Union ship, I won't have anything like this. You can't offload the kid. And it didn't feel like... Well, it's like you can't be the smart aleck 1 second and then all of a sudden have the gravitas.
Moral dilemma.
Exactly.
You know?
It's jarring. It's that weird transition between two things that don't feel compatible.
And see, I think I agree with Adam in that I mean to the extent that I see a potential in Seth MacFarlane, I actually think that he could. I think that he's just not used to a lot of live action acting. I think he's a little stiff. I think he can pull it off if he's got a little bit more experience. I'm a little bit more optimistic, but in that regard, I do think that. To Andy's point, you know, it's the fluidity. This show feels like it's at one show 1 minute and one show the next. It's Seth MacFarlane's show 1 minute, and it's Brandon Braga's the next. It's Family Guy 1 minute, and then it's you know, Star Trek: The Next Generation the next. And I feel like it's too staccato to keep. I mean, it's working.
Well,
I like
wonder
it.
Fox wasn't even sure what to do. If you look at the trailer that we saw, and it was all comedic, and you thought, well, I did, that the pilot was going to be a whole lot more. First of all, I thought it was going to be a half hour. I didn't realize it was going to be an hour.
Yeah.
And then I thought it was going to be all comedic, and then when you actually watch the episode and you see that there's actual, like, you know, human moments and things out, and it took me a minute actually to kind of readjust my brain to what I was expecting versus what I saw.
Yeah, well, for me, you know, I actually think that this is something that can work. This is just a matter of practice and getting the tones to work together. This is a matter of changing what is staccato into what is fluid and finding a more natural rhythm to kind of transition from these funny moments, these serious moments, which maybe brings us to the, you know, my next point, which is this idea that, in my opinion, despite kind of maybe these flaws and these stumbles that this show's been having, in my opinion, this has been my favorite Star Trek show since The Next Generation. I like this more than I've liked Voyager. As a Star Trek show, I like it more than I like Voyager. I like it more than I like DS9. And I may like it more as a Star Trek show than I like Discovery. I like Discovery. But I like this as a pure Star Trek show. This is the sequel to Next Generation that I've been waiting for since I was, you know, 11 years old.
I don't think it's a coincidence, though, that they've premiered it now at the same time that a new Star Trek show is coming on. Not necessarily to be a straight competitor to it, but...
Well, Discovery should have been on 3 years ago.
That's true. At the very least, at the beginning of this year, you know, that's what we were hoping for. But what about going from here, so we don't even know if it's going to get a full season. The ratings have dropped since they moved it from Sunday night to Thursday night. Do you think that it should go back to Sunday night? It goes with the other – I mean, it's already Seth MacFarlane's Sunday with three of the shows – Or no, just two. Is it American Dad and Family Guy? Or is
I don't
Cleveland
remember.
Show still?
You know, I don't know. I don't think the day of the week matters. I think with the TV the way it is now, if you like a show, you'll follow it around the schedule.
And find it.
And as far as the production, they're more interested, and I'm not going to say more interested, but there's also a lot of interest in how much money they're going to get by selling the syndication rights and whatnot.
Sure.
Now, to continue what you were talking about, whether this is a successor to Star Trek, I would argue.
Yeah, I want to know Adam's opinion as a Star Trek expert.
That in one very distinct and very Star Trekian way, this series has already claimed the successor to Star Trek because Discovery has not claimed this. And that's coming right up on the SLC Fanboys. SLC Fanboys talking about The Orville, six episodes in on the new Fox show from Seth MacFarlane and company, and we were talking about whether this show is a worthy successor to Star Trek. I would say on one critical but unfortunate element, if you look at the recent history of Star Trek shows, The Orville has certainly claimed at least part of that heritage, and that would be a rocky first season. I would say
yeah.
Rocky first season accounts for that because, like all the other Star Trek series before it, Enterprise, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and The Next Generation, I always exclude the original series from that from this conversation because it was so brand new to
right.
begin with. You know, everything else that came after, you would think it should have had a better plan. In the first season, casting errors, contradictory writing, silly aliens, bad recycled plots, Enterprise and The Next Generation really take the awards home on recycling bad plots for first season.
Well,
episodes.
And now we have a writer creator from The Next Generation from Enterprise
yeah.
on this show. I mean, to your argument. They shouldn't have this problem because he should have learned on the other shows.
Yes. So in that respect, kind of having a first season that's rocky, that has some, I would say, obvious flaws, but very importantly, paired up with some very obvious good things that give you hope. This is not a sign that it's going to go down in flames. This is a sign to me that it may be
following the track pattern.
It's kind of a success in more ways than one. So as long as they address these problems, like Star Trek did in many of the other series, for the most part, but especially in The Next Generation. I mean, you look at those first season Next Generation episodes and compare them to, you know, like the golden era of the fourth or the fifth. And sometimes they're just like, wow, what were you guys thinking here? And
well, the problem was Riker hadn't invented the head side thing yet or the leg over the chair maneuver. That all came later.
Yeah, and some issues with Worf's character in the first season that in later years, just you go back and look at the first season Worf compared to the very much more honorable Worf later. That Worf in the first season was a jerk. I'm sorry. I mean, he was a disloyal jerk. Get off this ship. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this show does have its flaws, but I agree with Adam. When it is working, this show is really working, and it does give you a lot of hope. Like I said, this is my favorite Star Trek show since The Next Generation.
But why?
Yeah,
like, what about it makes it so much favorable to you? Is it because you hold The Next Generation high?
No, it's more Trek than DS9 was, and it's more Trek than Voyager was.
So closer to Roddenberry's original vision, or closer to what? What
closer
makes
to the spirit of Trek in that it has the introspection into the human condition, into the it is more science fiction than I think DS9 was and Voyager was, which just started playing around in the Star Trek universe. Star Trek The Next Generation was always more about exploring human themes and themes of what it, you know, it was true sci-fi, and that sci-fi is always the exploration into the human condition in its most pure form.
I have felt this is very sci-fi, like true to form sci-fi, more than space opera.
And
although they throw in a little bit of that.
And DS9 and Voyager became space opera, whereas TNG was more true sci-fi. So I feel this is actually more Star Trek than the other Treks, which is why I like it. But that begs another question, which is, you know, they're trying to marry humor to this. And we've seen this done once before in Galaxy Quest, and that was a resounding success, I think, by anybody's metric. I mean, I remember in high school watching the trailer for Galaxy Quest and cringing, and then when it came out, you know, just rolling, and everybody rolled in their chairs in the aisle laughing. And that begs this question of this marriage between sci-fi and humor. And I think one of the reasons that humor worked so well in Galaxy Quest is that at their core, you know, science fiction is the mechanism through which we explore human themes in a way that we can do it in it, then it's non-threatening. You know, Planet of the Apes, it allows us to explore human themes. Star Trek through Data.
Well, I would even say in this, the episode about a girl, if you watch that episode, it depends on what perspective you want to have. You could assume that perspective whatever side of the argument you're on, I thought they did really well.
Yes,
of allowing both sides instead of, you know, giving a specific
cramming
message,
an agenda down your throat.
You could pick what agenda you wanted to hear.
Yeah, this was a question. It was very fair. It showed both sides of a gender issue and sexuality, but issues of gender and culture. And it was very fair. It presented both sides of an argument. It came up with a conclusion that maybe we didn't expect.
I did not expect it. I will be honest.
And so to do all that is very sci-fi. I mean, sci-fi is the lens that we ask tough questions about humanity through, but so is comedy. One of comedy's greatest, you know, assets and what it's used for is a way to tell jokes and talk about things that we may otherwise find threatening or uncomfortable to deal with. And so comedians talk about these things. I mean, think about all the off-color jokes in Rick and Morty or Family Guy. All of these jokes are made as a way of forcing us to confront uncomfortable social themes or ideas about people or ourselves or identity or things like that. So the marriage of these two mechanisms that both are kind of used to allow us to look at ourselves in ways that give us a protection buffer is an interesting marriage. I mean, you're marrying these two mechanisms that have the same goal.
But Trek has often used humor too. I mean, if you think about it, in fact, going to we've been talking about this off air, and we knew we were going to get to it. But Adam, the one you told me about, which I hadn't seen the episode before you told me about it, but then I watched it and it was hilarious. Where, I mean, what kind of a show can start where you're actually – they're literally watching Seinfeld on the front screen monitor. I thought that was almost as funny as anything else.
Yeah.
They're watching a TV show while they're floating through space, supposedly doing their duty. By the way, who's never watched TV at work on accident?
But that little scene right there, I think, gives us some insight into which type of humor works. The self-referential in-jokes about the failings of Star Trek plots or technobabble and stuff like that, those are going to be and should be nicely sprinkled in along the series run because they'll always have fans with us. But you can't build the entire comedy repertoire of the entire series based on references to Star Trek silliness, like, again,
right,
technobabble and
that's
all
that.
That's
why Galaxy Quest works as a movie, but maybe not as a series specifically,
exactly,
because that was specific to Star Trek.
Yeah, and it was almost, I don't want to say one, I mean, there was a lot of different types of jokes in that movie, but it all kind of centered around the concept of Captain Kirk,
yeah,
kind of just being frustrated with his lot in life. I mean, that was kind of the issue there. In this episode, and specifically that scene where they're watching Seinfeld, and my favorite line of the entire series, it's more of humor derived from The Office. This is office-setting humor, and that's what's working.
What it's like to be in the workplace.
When they run into the blob
humor
in the hallway.
Yes.
Or when he's like, I gotta go to the bathroom.
Yes, yes. In the very first episode, when they're having a crisis, and Scott Grimes, what's his character's name again?
Scott Grimes is Lieutenant Gordon Malloy.
Okay. Lieutenant Malloy, there's something on the screen. They know it's an issue now. I think the first officer was in charge. Screen goes off. He turns to the other guy and goes, we are not getting out of here at 5 o'clock tonight. I thought that was the funniest line in any Star Trek-related series ever because when have you ever treated or thought of a bridge officer on Star Trek as a working guy, 9-to-5 type of, you know, like you clock in for this?
Yeah, right.
No, you show up whenever the red alert's on or the captain wants you. This
it's all duty all the time.
Oh, yeah, you're always on duty. And I just thought that was a great line. And that's workplace humor. That's office humor. So I like that. And another examples of when they're doing that is they've had almost every episode a bridge gossip scene. Like where the plot delivers us to the point where multiple characters on the bridge are engaging in a running or rolling conversation. One of them was about humor, which we'll talk about in a little bit. One of them was right in the first episode when they're talking about, oh no, we're going to talk about this. The captain of the first officer used to be married, and you can hear them arguing in the other room
right
through the wall.
Yeah, it's very real, true to life.
They don't have a soundproofed bridge. That's hilarious.
And that kind of humor makes those sorts of uncomfortable human situations easier for us to identify with.
And Star Trek never really in humor went down, you know, kind of like the everyman kind of. I mean, there were little jokes here and there, but this is the type of humor that I think is going to take the Orville to where no one has gone before.
Agreed. Those are the moments when the Orville grabs those kinds of introspective human humor.
There you go, Adam. Yeah. You get a trumpet fanfare for that one.
Those are the moments when it takes those sorts of that type of humor to. Those are the moments that work with the sci-fi because when they're out arguing in the halls, the married couple, and everybody's sitting on the bridge, giving each other awkward eyes, you know, that is the moment when that is achieving the same goal as the science fiction. It is allowing us to see, you know, ourselves in a way that we're comfortable seeing ourselves in an uncomfortable situation, mm-hmm, or to learn something from ourselves.
Well, and I like that too. again, my only complaint with the way they're using the humor is it. I just feel like there's somewhere in the middle. Like, they haven't got to the middle point where it's somewhere between stuff that doesn't pull me out of the story. Because that's what I don't want. I like humor to be part of the story. I mean, I can go watch an opera if it's got some funny parts, as long as it fits. But the jokes that they're telling, even when I laugh, sometimes I feel like they're taking me out of the story, and then I'm kind of mad at them for doing that, because I was liking the story, and then I'm like, oh yeah, this is just a comedy show.
But
like,
some of those jokes, but I think maybe you could distill the jokes that bother you down to more the jokes that reference 20th century, 21st century stuff, as opposed to, I also like the arguing out in the hall scene when everybody's just sitting awkwardly on the bridge looking at each other.
Well,
like,
yeah, and that
are
was
we really
funny,
doing
but
this?
Like, when they're in the lift on the one episode, on the planet episode, and it's like we only got in the lift so we could tell this stupid joke about...
So, how's it going?
Like, have it in a more natural setting. Like, that
needs
to be on
the ship.
Well,
that goes
to
the fluidity of it.
You know, the natural joke that got me a couple weeks ago was when they dressed up as Krill, and they had to come up, and he came up with names for his Chris and...
Devin.
Devin.
Yeah, Chris and Devin.
Krill alien names. Chris and Devin. That killed me.
But it was funny, but I also was like, come on! But like, I want to believe in this as a sci-fi show, and that keeps me from doing it.
And this is an important aspect, I think, that these are two different types of humor. I mean, the arguing out in the hall scene, and there is a wonderful scene that I think encapsulates, if they embrace it, which I think we'll talk about after the break, you know, that I think really encapsulates the humor that they should be going for. But the Chris and Devin joke I really thought was funny, but that's more of a superficial 21st century type joke, versus the arguing out in the hall scene is a more introspective joke. And I think if, as long as they lean towards more one than the other, then we'll do all right.
Coming up, we'll review a very good sign about this show, how they took a standard Next Generation data plot and flipped it and made it hilarious. Coming up next on the SLC Fanboys. SLC Fanboys reviewing the first several episodes of The Orville on Fox. First several episodes so far of the first season. We've been talking about humor and its use in The Orville, and as sort of a window into the human, what do they always say on Star Trek? The human spirit, the human
experience.
The human experience, that's right. As a window, the human experience. Sci-fi, of course, is a window in the human experience that we've seen for decades via Star Trek. And now The Orville, I think, is really ramping up humor to basically make this, you know, a fair 50-50 split, sci-fi
and
humor.
When it works, it augments.
And it does work. And I think we all agreed independently, we kind of realized this in the last week preparing for this show, that there was one scene in particular that we thought really hit all of the elements we like about The Orville, such as taking a great Star Trek or sci-fi plot, freshening it up, but really Orvillianing it. And that is... the whole issue with Isaac learning humor.
Which was a data thing.
That is a data plot.
Absolutely. But they truly have the ability in this show now to not only use the sci-fi angle of it into, well, what is humor and what does it mean? And what does it mean for me as a sentient being? And ask
and
all those
Joe
questions.
Not get Joe Piscopo in a holodeck.
Right. But at the same time.
That's right. I forgot about that episode.
Right. But at the same time, actually bring the humor to it and then add that extra level of depth by using the humor. And you had a favorite moment in one of these latest episodes where I think that this is the moment, the height of the show for me, where this marriage of humor is a window into the human experience and sci-fi is a window into the human experience and a discussion for these where they did the perfect marriage and it kind of hit that high point for me.
You told me about it and I was like, no, they didn't.
The episode opens up, like we had mentioned before, this is the one where they open up watching the episode of Seinfeld on the bridge, which, again, that's great workplace humor. That's a great
to study
plot.
Humor, to teach Isaac humor. They're watching Seinfeld.
Oh, is that why they were doing
it? Yes.
They were watching TV.
Which is totally a TNG thing where, hey, we're going to do something just for Data's benefit here. We're going to show Data just for Data's benefit, just for his education. Uh-huh. And so the scene goes on. Isaac, of course, as you can figure at the beginning of the episode, has no idea about humor, its application, how to pull it off, why it's kind of interesting, why it's important to humans. So they have
and they
to explain it.
Like, you know, hey, what? But that junior mint went into the person. Is that not sadistic? Could that not be painful? And they're like,
well, yes, well, but that's why it's funny.
That's why it's funny. And then stop ruining it for us.
Apparently, that's the only thing Isaac remembered from that conversation.
Well, so first, though, you got Malloy promising, hey, you know what? I'll teach you what a practical joke is. And so then you see this scene where he walks onto the bridge. Isaac walks onto the bridge later.
Is there some reason I am the central focus of everyone's attention?
Isaac, are you aware that you have Mr. Potato Head pieces all over you? I got you, man. I totally got you. See, that's a practical joke.
Wait, you put that stuff on him?
While he was recharging. Okay. So now it's your turn, okay? You gotta get me. And you gotta be creative. You gotta do it when I least expect it.
And this is humor.
Yes!
I must admit, it is quite challenging. However, I will do my best.
Word for word. That is word for word. Brett Spiner's dialogue from any number of episodes. He will sit there, curious, I don't understand. I mean, that's almost the same inflection that Isaac even put in.
Yep. So, he takes every single word that Malloy says, literally.
Literally. And after that, later in the episode, Lieutenant Malloy walks onto the bridge. I'm sorry. He wakes up first.
He wakes up and falls out of bed.
He falls out of bed realizing that his left leg is now missing. He then hops onto the bridge. I mean, just
literally hopping.
Hops onto the bridge, yelling at Isaac. Everyone is amazed, horrified, aghast. Isaac just did not figure out humor. He had... Because that's what a practical joke is, according to Isaac.
You gotta be sadistic. Remember, they noted that. And then you've got to, and then he says all of those, everything he just said, he did to a T.
Did to a T by removing Lieutenant Malloy's leg in the middle of the night. In fact, I even think they said they knocked him out.
Yeah, used anesthetic.
He got him while he was recharging, so he got him while he was sleeping.
Right. Do we have that clip?
No, that I don't have.
He hobbles onto the bridge and just begins to berate Isaac for what a terrible, sadistic, awful. And he says, well, I followed all of your parameters. And then later in the episode, after Malloy closed down, he does admit that this is perhaps the greatest practical joke after his leg has been regenerated.
Yes.
Yeah, he's got his leg back.
What about the original leg?
But I'll tell you what, though. I thought this thing was funny and it was killing me, but when this plot finally clinched it for me and really made it, it's like, yes, this works. The A-plot in this episode, was this the one with Charlize Theron?
Yes, it was. Yes.
The A-plot in this one is Captain Mercer, Charlize Theron, and I believe Laura were in a conference room having a discussion that was very critical to the plot 15 minutes near the end of the episode. And out of nowhere, in the center of the room, from the ceiling, wham, drops the severed leg that was
apparently... Yeah, it comes out of nowhere. Like, that was a great moment.
It's like nothing to do with the plot. You would not be waiting for it at all, and suddenly there it was. And then, if that's not enough, they finish their discussion, and Alora's like, do you want me to take that?
But that's that moment where you're dealing with awkward humanness, and you're looking deep into the human experience.
That was funny.
And there have been some other great moments, once again.
My favorite portion, and this is one that caught me by surprise, and I've not laughed at anything as hard as I did this. It's the episode with Bordas and Clyden, and they're trying to decide what to do with their kid. And so
this child has been born. They come from an all-male race, but their child was born female, and that is a form of heresy or blasphemy. And so they're debating whether or not to give it a sex change at birth to make it male, because females
with society
don't exist, right? So it can fit in and have a normal life.
And so
and the crew, but the crew disagrees with this decision.
And so at one point, you got the helmsman, you've got Lamar and Malloy show up in Bordas's room to help him out. You know what we need to do? We need to have a guy's night. We need to watch a 20th century movie and have a bunch of beers. And so they watch Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which leads to the funniest line.
In a not-so-veiled attempt to help Bordas come to the conclusion that maybe leaving his daughter female might be the right conclusion.
And this is what happens, and oh my gosh.
Without Rudolph's nose, Santa would not have been able to complete his voyage.
Well, looks like Santa got pretty lucky, huh?
Christmas would have been ruined if Rudolph had been euthanized at birth as his father wished.
Yeah, I don't know if that was ever on the table.
What was clearly a deformity became a supreme advantage.
And then Bordas goes to try to convince his mate, Clyden, and it was just a short line. He's like, wait until you hear the tale of Rudolph. You will change your mind. But the funny thing was, I could also see Worf doing that exact same thing. Like, it's hard not to see the one with the other. But just laugh out loud. That's what they were going for, and it worked like a charm. And he goes too far. If he had been euthanized, I loved that. I laughed out loud, and I couldn't stop laughing for like 3 minutes of that.
And these are the moments that when these two mechanisms, humor as window into human behavior and sci-fi as window into human behavior, when they stack, that's when this show really clicks and becomes something special.
So question, do you think it deserves a full season order?
Well, yeah.
I think so.
Give it a full season.
I want a full season of it. And I hope it gets more than that because I think this is something that they can explore. Sorry, Adam, I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
Well, you know, one thing I'll give this show credit for is when they use classic media, they don't go into the public realm. They're not going for the license-free options that
right.
they did throughout Star Trek. Like Enterprise and Voyager had movie nights. Oh, wow, what a shock. It's a movie made before 1950. They don't have to play any royalties.
It's all black and white, right?
Yeah, it's black and white. It's in the public domain. And now, you have these guys watching Seinfeld, which I'm sure they had to do with permission or pay a little bit of money to do. And I like that. That's realistic. And Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is a piece of pop culture from the 20th century that, yes, it will be around in the future. It's
right.
a timeless children's tale. So I like seeing little things, just little things like that. Go on ahead and put something realistic that people you think in the future might actually value from the 20th or 21st century from film and television.
I will tell you this. The next episode, I looked it up. You're going to laugh at this. Two anthropologists will go missing on a planet very similar to 21st century Earth.
Funny.
So we may get a whole lot more
now
of that
might
kind of
be
stuff.
A little bit of an in-joke to the early Roddenberry
oh, yes.
coming up with this theory of he backed into it so he can explain the lack of production costs and why every alien looked human and every society was based on something out of Earth's past, even though these are alien worlds. I wonder if that's going to be a little in-joke
to that well, it's certainly a Star Trek theme. So
the one thing oh go ahead
oh no I was just gonna I was just gonna ask you what you thought, Aaron.
You know, I like it. I think it does deserve a full season. I think it has loads of potential. I mean, I think that you can see that this is a huge gold mine, but they're just beginning to scratch the surface on some of the veins. The one thing that I think that they will have to do is maybe switch up their visual style just a little bit to help them their jokes flow a little bit better. I think shooting it, I mean, it looks like it's shot just like a Star Trek episode. I think changing the way just they do things visually even will help that fluidity transfer. Otherwise, I like where it's going. I think it absolutely
shot like a Star Trek episode, non-Discovery category.
Yeah. Like an old school.
And you know, and I'll just throw this one little line there when we're comparing it to other Star Trek shows. I do like the fact that we're end up comparing it to the previous Trek, and it has really no parallels or anything to Discovery right now. And I really like that. It both tells me, one, that they have evolved into at least something different for Star Trek, which has been critical,
right.
which I could have told you 20 years ago was needed for the series.
They could have evolved into humor, but Star Trek proper could never have done that. So
no.
Orville takes that route where Star Trek could not
but
have.
I'm just glad we don't have two series on right now. I'm just glad that the Orville has been done in 2017 and not 2001 when Enterprise
yeah,
came out.
Yeah, they're definitely not in competition.
Because then they would have been in competition, and I probably would have told you the Orville would have won handedly.
So let me ask you.
That would have ruined Star Trek.
That would have ruined Enterprise probably after the first or second season.
I want a score from both you guys based on how you think it is right now versus how would you score its potential? What do you think it can be? So, Adam, what do you think its score is now versus what do you think its potential?
Potential, I think it can be 3.5 or 4 out of 4. Right now, I think we're in that 2.5-3 kind of range.
Andy?
I would go with about 2 to 2.5 just because it's too uneven for my liking, where I just don't like feeling like I'm not sure yet what I'm watching. And I think they can get to a streamlined point where they don't have to abandon what they're trying to do to make me happy. But I'm also willing to accept that I'm watching a new kind of humor and a new kind of show. I'm not going to just throw it out because it's not what I've had before.
So how would you score its potential?
Potential? Oh, absolutely. I think it could go up to 3.5. I don't know if it could ever be a perfect show, but who knows? I mean, I'd love to be surprised by that, but you know, a ceiling for me right now would be about 3.5 out of 4.
I do out of 10, so I would do 7.5 out of 10. I think it has the potential to go to 8, 8.5, maybe even a 9 if they really make it click.
All right, so you've heard our thoughts now on the Orville and the 6 episodes that we've seen so far. We want to know what you think. Do you think this can live up to its heritage and its potential? This won't be the last time we go through it. We've got at least another 6 episodes to watch and talk about. We like it. I'm looking forward to seeing more humorous things. We invite you to join us on our Facebook page or go to www.slcfanboys.com, and that will actually take you to our Facebook page. But even better, go to iTunes. Go to your podcast app on your iPhone, or just go to iTunes, search SLC Fanboys, and click that subscribe link and get all of our great episodes where we enjoy talking about these things as much as you do.
Android users too, and we do have big things coming up. We're getting very close, I think, to being able to share them with you, but once again, we're very excited, and as soon as we can, we will.
All right. For Andy Farnsworth, Aaron Zundel, and Adam Thomas, what's our good catchphrase for the Orville? We need one.
The Redenbacher.
Thanks for checking out SLC Fanboys. Fulfill your destiny and follow us on social media. SLC Fanboys on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.